Into the Nexus is a production of amove.tv. Bookmark Amove TV for other great video games and esports podcasts. Into the Nexus is sponsored by listeners like you via patreon.com/ITN. Welcome back, everyone, to Into the Nexus, the podcast all about Heroes of the Storm. I'm Garrett Weinzierl. Joining me, as always, is Kyle Ferguson. And returning triumphantly, Dunk Train. Welcome back, man.
Hey, man. Good to be back.
Good to have you back. You people don't know, we owe you a big thanks because you were waiting in the wings as our backup 200 episode 200 guest in case... certain requests to a certain large studio didn't pan out.
Yeah, in case they got red taped. No big deal, man. I don't mind at all. Glad it came through for you guys.
Oh yeah, we very much appreciate it. So here we go again. I hope everyone is fine waiting 2 years before we're to a nice big round number again, and we because of that round number, do an arbitrary special episode. Just get it going with 201. But Kyle, you're here as well. How you doing, man? How's the week in Heroes treated you?
Oh, I'm doing well. It's always nice to have Dunk Train on because it means that for the whole week, I basically go, I don't understand this, and I get someone to tell me what the heck is going on in here.
I don't know if you know this now. Are you aware of like the type of doomsaying enabling you give us? Because if we know you're coming on, I feel like on weeks you're not here, both of us try very hard to stay in a mental state where we're kind of on top of things and we find our own answers to questions. But then when you're coming on, if things start to not make sense, just a little bit, at least for me, I'm just like, none of this makes sense. I'm just gonna compile a bunch of questions for Dunk Train on Thursday.
That's awesome. I didn't know that. I mean, I was compiling my own list of questions today. I had a first pick Abathur Medivh game that we completely crushed. And then we crushed a Kerrigan Alarak game. So I don't know, man. The comps are getting weird.
So yesterday, Kyle, I crashed your stream. I joined you for some games, not on voice though, which I'm going to use as my excuse. I had your stream up, so I was reacting to things 15 seconds too late. So that was interesting. But seriously, yeah, the biggest spanking I think I have had in the last month of Hearthstone was in a game yesterday on your stream with a Medivh on the opposing team. It just felt like there was nothing we could do.
It's bizarre in there. I had a game this week that really kind of highlighted the last month for me. My first picks on my team are Vala and Greymane. We get a Stukov thrown right on top of that. And they just load up on the burst. I'm thinking, man, that's a lot of deeps. This is awesome. All we got to do is live. Slam that Uther. Livid. Everybody is livid to have an Uther on their team in addition to the Stukov. Vala goes auto attack build, so there's no burst. She wants to like slowly build up and engage. And I'm pinging that Divine Shield like mad saying, can someone be into this? And ultimately, in the end, my chat kind of solved the puzzle and said, that wasn't a Greymane player. That was a guy playing Greymane. And a month ago, I was a Greymane main. I was a Greymane Uther main. Nobody wants to see the Uther, and everybody's taking Greymane. So I am lost. Like, if people want to see Zarya, they're like, oh, second support Zarya, hell yeah. And you're just, what do you hate? What do you? I've heard that Stukov is a troll pick. People have yelled that this week, and I'm going, oh?
Dude, Stukov's busted. Stukov's so good right now.
It's bizarre.
Where do you think that's coming from, Kyle? Like, we were talking about this earlier. Like, why are people having such emotional reactions to picks that should be fine? Should be instilling a sense of confidence in your teammates.
I don't know. I have strong opinions about Tassadar and Tyrande right now where I'm like, no, that doesn't fly. But I still think there's so much DPS hidden inside those carries that we can get it out with a double support, but people simply don't want to do it. And there's no pattern to me. That's the scary part about this. Each game is a little different and each game wins in a different way. Sometimes you win all the team fights, but lose the map. Sometimes you win the map, but lose the team fights. And that doesn't give us a structure. So if we were to ask you the biggest question of what's going on, what would be your response?
The biggest, at the biggest level of what's going on since the last time I came on, I think it's been a while. So we had the changes to the tower and stuff, right? And everyone could tell there was definitely something wrong with the game right when that happened. Like, the games were getting wildly out of control. So Blizzard patched and buffed all the towers and forts. They do much more damage. And I think the games are much more manageable now. But to me, the story of the game is definitely very much still, if you get an early advantage in kills or something, capitalize with structures, because it feels like the structures are very easy to take down in any amount of a coordinated push. So I think the game right now is a lot of like early game snowballing, structural advantage, map control type situation.
Yeah, I've gone down a couple of routes over the last 3 weeks, and really what I've settled on is tower farming and kind of ignoring my opponent in lane. First, I tried the Alarak route where I'm going to beat you. Let's have a nice, you know, 1v1 battle and I'll take your orbs. But that didn't work because when I got to the tower, if I won the fight, I can't go take a merc camp because I'll miss out on all the soak. And I can't destroy the towers with great efficiency, kind of like Malfiel as well. You just sort of stop when you reach that.
Yeah, yeah.
And by doing like, I remember this from like Li Ming, like post-release, where we would just ignore the middle fight and throw orbs into the towers over and over again to get them down. Yeah. And I'm doing that again. Is this like, and it feels good. It gives you a 3-level lead, and that having 10 when they're 7 is fantastic, and you tend to win at 13 minutes after that. Is that because the one tower being split into 3 and 2 of those parts ending up on the front guys and the wall? Like, where did this come from?
Yeah, I'm not really sure where like the exact specific like math comes from in that. It just definitely feels like having one, like, it's probably something more to do with ammo than anything else, because before, like, you generally run both towers out of ammo at the same time. If you were like doing the 4-1 thing and just shoving waves in, they would run out of ammo, but now they never run out of ammo. So when you kill the first tower, you reduce the DPS the whole front gate does by half. And that also means that each minion wave that reaches the tower is doing like double the damage, right? Because it takes twice as long to kill it. So you get way more DPS uptime. So I think that's why, it's just like one minion wave does half of a single turret health, but like an irrelevant fraction of if both turrets are up, you know?
That's interesting. I didn't think about that kind of next level to it. I've certainly seen a lot of sad Sonyas who win their lane, go take their merc camp, come back to a lost lane, lose their merc camp, and then go, but why? I did everything right. My rotation was awesome.
What you're saying is you've seen me. You've seen me in games after the last few patches we've had.
Yeah. So Zergen Towers really effective right now.
It's where gross. Have you kind of ended up in that world, character-wise, hero-wise?
Oh, man. I've been doing a little bit of soul-searching with the heroes lately. Like, I couldn't find anything that was really working for me.
God, that is the most relieving thing I've heard in a very long time.
Actually, so what I've started doing is I've started playing basically only mages and supports. I will fill tank if I have to, and it's not that I think I'm a bad tank or anything. I just play an ETC or something. He's got great map control, but like, what I really like to do is play Jaina and just soak all the waves and make sure no waves ever hit my tower uncontested, because Jaina can do that. You just walk up to a wave, blizzard it, and then you can leave and find the next place that your teammates aren't soaking properly. Because I've found that the merc camps come up earlier, right? And in my experience, people are like trying to rush to get the merc camps as strong as possible, which isn't a bad thing, but they'll like leave lanes unsoaked because of it, which is just like totally not okay. So if I'm playing a huge wave clear hero like Gul'dan or Jaina, I can actually just rotate around the map and catch those waves. And then the merc camps are actually beneficial to us because we aren't, you know, losing a tower to get one merc camp that the enemy's going to defend anyway. So that's what I've been doing lately, and it seems like it's working.
We're seeing a kind of reflection of that in HGC as people are running double globals, not to gank, but to replace the global guy who left his lane so that that lane can be soaked in his absence.
Yeah.
Well, where do you think that the kind of mentality came from? Because it's never really been okay to leave lanes unsoaked. So why now?
I think it's just because the objective comes up later and people feel like they're running around and they don't know what to do. And it's like, oh, there's yellow mercs on the map.
Are you saying we're impatient? Them, you know? Are you saying we're impatient? Like we don't know how to just lane for a little bit?
Yes. I think the literal hardest thing to do in all of Heroes of the Storm, just imagine this scenario. You're 4v5 right now. You're both level 16 and there's 10 seconds left on one of your teammates' death timer. Where is your whole team standing? They're not standing under their keep where they should be standing, are they? They have to be poking the enemy team. We are impatient, dude. The hardest thing in the whole world is to just stand there and accept that maybe you don't need to be making a play right now. Maybe you should just wait for the opportune moment. But it's tough.
That's mad true. And the number of times I've been sort of just standing behind a wall this week and it's been the correct thing to do in the long run has been almost every single game at some point. But I do wonder if our tower priorities trick us into avoiding those situations, because when you go into tower range and you have a wave with you, that tower isn't interested in any of the heroes. So I don't feel an increased defense when I'm in defensive positions.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably some of it. But again, that's why like being able to wave clear is so important, because if you are running a light wave clear composition, it can be really difficult to hold the pushes, especially with like the nightcap. Nightcap pushes are so deadly right now if your team's lacking wave clear.
That makes a lot of sense. So Kyle, it seemed like you were leaning towards maybe suggesting that towers prioritize heroes. Is that something you want to see?
It's a dirty world because our minions aren't healthy enough for that sort of interaction. When a tower targets a minion, it's dead 2 shots later. When we look at something like Dota, it really kind of lingers. And until it finds its next target, you know it's locked onto that minion and won't target you until that guy's dead. Same thing works, you know, when there are no minions left and it'll find you afterwards with a little bit of maybe locational priority, damage priority there. I don't think you can just plug that into Heroes of the Storm and make it work, but it would change the way I thought about defending a tower, because I would know that'd be the backup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is kind of a feels bad moment when like you see that the enemy team is like diving you and there's like two melee minions that live just long enough for them to like kill you and escape, and you're like, oh, my towers, they do nothing.
I'm very winded by having to fight for my specialist. It feels like all anyone wants to play right now are specialists.
You don't want right now, man.
Yeah, but you don't need two of them. You don't need three of them. It's not like my Zagara is getting taken or picked by someone else on my team. It's just that another specialist is getting locked in. So I was so excited by the laning fame just changes before the holidays, and I was like, yeah, I'm going all in on specialists, and it was working beautifully. And now I feel like I'm like, well, crap, I'm not fluid enough to exist in a world where a lot of other people want to be playing specialists.
I see.
And this is an interesting question or conversation to have too, because I'm happy to report that Jeff Cannata is on a mad winning spree. We've been coaching him for about 3 months now, got him built from the ground up on Malfiel, and he is destroying it out there, making some really amazing choices, using his teleport to dodge skill shots. Like if for silver play, particularly silver one, like he is in a mode where he is destroying it. And I was coaching him yesterday. We're using Caffeine, so we have a live stream. I can see him in real time while he's in Hero League and I'm talking over it. And I'm about to say all these things like curve sideways to dodge the Genji, but Genji misses anyway in silver. So we're kind of talking about two metas at the same time as we kind of talk about what's happening on top, which for me right now is double tank Genji, this front line that you can't stop with this guy Hanzo Genji that's sort of leaping around much like our old Li Mings did, unsnaggable in a lot of ways. But in the lower leagues, things are just so different because Genji can't even hit that skill shot that break that then gets the kill on the Abathur and brings him back over the wall.
What are the common bans, like first two bans where you guys are playing? Just curious. Because where I play, it's like almost 100% Hanzo Genji as default bans. And then like if there's a known one trick or something on the enemy team, you might ban whatever their one trick is, Medivh or Chromie or something.
As of HGC, it's Hanzo Genji. Before that, it was Sylvanas Nova.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, man, I see Nova's actually good right now. Scary enough.
Surprise the Genji.
You're saying Syl?
No, Nova's actually good.
Oh, Nova. Oh, gotcha.
Like, as long as you have all your wave clear covered, like you're saying, everybody's playing specialists right now. Well, specialists are vulnerable to Nova. And if you have a specialist on your team, you kind of cover Nova's laning weakness. So it could be something to try out.
I hadn't really thought about that. But yeah, I definitely... Nova was so contested for basically the whole holiday season up till now. And now HGC came out. Everyone's shifting to the meta that they're seeing on screen. And Nova's just gone. I haven't seen any Nova play this week.
Yeah, I think I've only seen one or two games. I was seeing more before HTC, but that's kind of to be expected.
That's
everyone kind of runs around like chickens with their head cut off, you know, during the off season for HTC. They're like, oh, I don't know what the pros are going to play, so well, I'll pick whatever I want.
I'm trying really hard to rack my memory to think if we had this many changes last holiday season or the holiday season before that. I don't think we did, but this holiday season was compounded by those post BlizzCon changes that came in. It just took the whole game and just flipped the table over. It's like, all right, learn a new game. Also, team the Heroes team is taking a break. There's no esports. There's no one giving you answers. We've all been, man, I don't know, man. It's it's like The Walking Dead out there. I feel like it's a post-apocalyptic nexus. And then, of course, HGC shows up and here's your answers, everyone. This is what is working.
That problem is exacerbated by the fact that the HGC website ran strategy articles this week telling us how we should have been playing the game for the past 3 weeks. And like, I know they got to hide this stuff. It's pro play. They want to be secretive, but it's just like, come on, guys. We were all so lost. It's like Volskaya as well. Just silence and crickets when Volskaya comes out because nobody has to play it for realsies.
Yeah,
we're just like, guy, somebody tell me, is this tower good? Is the robot good? Who should be in it?
Yep.
So do I get in the robot? Oh, God.
Please let me know.
Somebody, please. I mean, but you're absolutely right. Like, at a certain point, you do need some sort of feedback, right? Because otherwise, it's what you were talking about, Kyle, what you talked about at the beginning of the show. You lock in a pick, everyone's freaking out at you, and you don't know why. And actually, we even have HGC, and I don't know why people were freaking out at some of the picks you were making. Gray main, I get. I disagree with it, but I at least understand where it's coming from. But some of the other stuff that people were losing their minds about, I don't know, man.
That right, Uther? You got, I mean, 35% win rate in HGC on Gray main, even though he was so included in NA, by the way. And then a bunch of people just getting onto Gray main who weren't previously working on him or passionate. So kind of the pool of performance drops and everyone starts to assume your Gray main's one of those Gray mains.
Oh, yeah. Complete honesty. Like, I'm mostly a mage and support player. So like, Gray main was super popular lately. So I'm like, oh, I'll play some Gray main. And I'm like, I am not that good at Gray main. Like, my auto attack carry mechanics are not as hot as I would like them to be. And I was like, maybe I'll stick to the healers and the mages.
Yeah. Now my Gray main is trash. Absolute trash.
It's really difficult in this time of year. And it's a pattern that I've realized now over 3 years of Heroes of the Storm. When we approach the new year and we get into January, February, we almost saw what was end up in double tank comps. And last year, it was really that reign of Dahaka and reworked Dahaka, Sonya, that just barreled down. And I feel like as the year goes on, I kind of make my way back onto these really risky dive characters because the front line gets softer and softer and the back line gets bigger and bigger. And if I can get back in there, I can really wreak some havoc, and my support line has grown, so my dives aren't as vulnerable. But come that new year, the CC is piled on, and you're just not sure who's a good target anymore.
I've started dusting off my Tracer this week, by the way, for that very reason. No one wants me on Genji. No one wants me on Gray main. I can kind of make it work with Tracer.
And in the background here, I'm watching Jeff Kanata's bands in his league, and they are Dahaka, Kael'thas almost every game. So these things do not fully permeate downward.
Huh. Neat.
You gotta be worried about this, but yeah, you gotta be worried about living bombs, man. You know, the tank.
That actually makes sense. Like, when I was the heroes I don't want to face with a silver tank Kaldas is probably one of them.
As I was passing through Silver at the beginning of this season, because that's how my life's been going. The Dahaka bands were all over the place. I did not see a single Kaldas band though. But
interesting.
I guess that kind of makes sense. I don't know, man. I'm still convinced that my games were better in Silver. Like the drafts made sense. Like it, I got it. I mean, right now things are so in flux. So I'm back to the drawing board as well. I'm with Dunk. I don't know who's my hero anymore, other than Zagara. Like if the opening is there, no one else is like. There's not also a Nazebo and also a Murky being shown. Yeah, I get on the Zagara, but other than that, I don't know. I'm like leaning towards Ragnaros, but I'm not sure. Like,
ooh, Rag is so good right now.
Yeah, it's working out. The best thing with Rag was last week. I picked it, and I wish I could remember our comp, but multiple players in draft goes, I don't think we have enough damage, and I'm just sitting there like, oh, we've got enough damage. We're good. Don't worry about it. And we just stomped. It was disgusting, but it's not always the case. But yeah, my Rag games have been going pretty solid, which. It was not a hero I thought I'd ever find myself on. But that's the nature of changes like this, is that it forces you to shift into roles you didn't think you'd be playing.
If people still continue to play in their previous modes, and there's a lot of autopilot that happens in the early game, and Rag, as well as Chromie, can kind of give you that buffer to get your Nazebo to where he's comfortable, or like Jaina, too. I mean, I know I'm kind of skittish, and then 13 comes, and I'm like, yeah, Jaina, in your face, with my sweet shields. But I got to get there before I can dab that level of performance.
Dude, I mean, in your games yesterday, like when I was on stream and I apparently am your bad luck charm and we went on a losing streak. Like even
hey, we won all day today. It's good.
Even in the losing games, like your Jaina is the cutest Jaina I have ever seen. your like worth it dive blizzard ice block is, oh, I love it. I love it, man. I love watching you just get in the shit. And ice block yourself while Ring of Frost and Blizzard just lay waste.
Oh, it's so good. Peeking out through that ice, you know, rubbing a little a window for you to see everything going on in there. But that's the sort of knife's edge that I enjoy playing on the most. You know, when this game came out, it was Rainer, and I really enjoyed his heal because you made a mistake diving me. Taz Dingo, Uther, like, oh, so much of the way I play is... It's Zerg. It's look over here, look at this, and Muta's in your face. Oh, I gotcha. And everything has no health, so if they were positioned correctly with the siege, it's all over, but I gotcha. But it means when something like a tower suddenly does bonus damage or the front line changes, that balance is off, and you do the splits on that knife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about more of this throughout the show, but there were some more changes in the Nexus this week, so let's get into this week's Heroes of the Storm news.
We're on, boys! Let's liven up this place!
Point me to the stage!
Stay a while and listen.
Well, gentlemen, I thought we were going to show up to the show today and BS about some lame teaser. And how it's probably Maeve, but thank God the Heroes team saw fit to just inform us that it is indeed Maeve. So Maeve confirmed, but that's all that's confirmed. We don't know her kit. We don't know. Do we know her role? No.
No. We know literally nothing other than that she exists.
All right.
And she hates Illidan a lot.
I think one Blizzard dev did say that the character was very fun. So we know it's a fun character and that it exists.
Oh, thank you, Blizzard.
It has nice animations.
Nice.
I mean, that's so surprising. I mean, thinking of how many times Blizzard devs have come out and said they're really not fun. We really dropped the ball on this one, guys. Like, that's surprising. I am a big Maeve fan. Burning Crusade was the first time I played max level WoW. I started in vanilla, but I never hit max level.
Yeah.
So Maeve is very near and dear to my heart. Warcraft 3 is also, you know, where I got into Blizzard in general. So, hooray. I'm curious about how excited to be, because I want to know what she does, what role she'll be fulfilling. Does it look like she even has a place in this meta? I'm not sure.
I mean, she has to be an assassin, right? Like, just, like, there's no way they can make her not an assassin, right?
I could see an argument for specialist. She's a monster hunter. She hunts demons and monsters. Like, so I could see her taking a bend into controlling lanes and being adept at capturing mercenary camps.
Kind of an interesting idea. Okay. I can see her bladed curtain spins every time she does an auto attack and does a little bit of lane clear, and she kind of makes her way into specialist territory. I mean, for me, I'm sitting here going, oh no, another blinker. Now here it comes. But then, you know, I remember that alt, that shadow alt, and that thing was cool as hell.
Which one?
Got even cooler in Dota. She would like make a shadow version of herself, a sentinel or something, and every time it kills units, it would make these little ghosts, and they'd all run forward, and that was good.
I'm thinking of the corrupted warden fight. I can't remember the warden that's corrupted in the current Warcraft expansion, Legion, but in one of the five mans, you fight a warden that's gone over to the side of the Legion, and there's this whole mechanic of, oh yeah, Dunk knows what I'm talking about.
Cordana Felsong.
The Cordana Felsong fight is one of the coolest things they've ever done in the history of five mans in World of Warcraft. I don't know how you bring that into this game, and the thought of adding any more stealth characters makes me want to vomit onto my webcam as we speak. But there's wardens are just awesome. I mean, there's so many routes they could go, and I'm trying really hard not to hitch my wagon to any of them, because I can think back to almost 200 episodes ago where Kyle was talking about Nazeebo for the first time. He's like, not my witch doctor. I don't go toads in Diablo 3. Well, that's the thing, right? Is like you start, if you play these other Blizzard games, if you have a thought in your head of what these heroes should be, it's hard not to be disappointed when they do come out, because they only have so many abilities they can give them. But man, wardens are dope. So I'm trying excited. To just keep an open mind.
And what make me truly excited is the ult I mentioned, because it's awesome, and you could do some lane pushing with it, maybe as minions die and you create ghosts. But the idea of sealing somebody, having one more Anubarak, one more Stitches, just throwing someone in a crystal for a second, letting Genji calm down before he comes out, 10,000 years later, letting him go.
That would be... Oh, man. How many of those do we have? Anubarak, Stitches? Are there any others?
No. Void Prison is time stop. Void
Prison,
so.
Kind of, yeah. But like, just imagine being that one person. If you just like pick a comp that has all those and chain one person back to back, like enjoy your 30 seconds of not playing the game, buddy.
I mean, you can kind of do that now if you really want to. You gorge them, then you maw them, then you Void Prison them, then you web wrap them. Like, you can kind of already do that, but yeah, you're right. I mean. In my head, I go to basically how web wrap works. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, I would definitely give her that if Anubarak didn't exist. So I don't know how they make it different.
True.
But, yeah, I'm not too sure. But by the way, I'm just trying to play devil's advocate and fight for support. If I was a betting man, if I had to put money on this, my money would be on Assassin.
Okay.
It's a horrifying prospect for her to enter the game for me, because I'm haunted by her Dota model, which disappeared. One of her abilities was, over the course of leveling, you would slowly phase out your character to nothing but the model's shadow, and the shadow would walk the map, murdering the heck out of everybody with critical strikes.
That was such a cool effect. Like, I think that's actually an area that, like, a lot of MOBAs don't explore enough, is like the visuals and stuff can be like a part of the power of something, like a character being harder to see, character having smaller hitbox. They've actually mentioned that, like, that's part of the fantasy for Valyra, is actually because she has a smaller hitbox and model, like, she's intended to be harder to hit with skill shots and like to notice on your screen and stuff. Like, I think that's something that could get played with more. Messing up people's vision. Like, what if you darkened the person's screen for Maiev? Like, one of her abilities puts someone in the dark, like Dahaka kind of does, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that kind of stuff is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that Dahaka ability is one of the most unique in the game right now.
Yeah.
Like, who else does something like that? Like, we just mentioned Stitches and Anubarak and all these other abilities that kind of take you out of play, but there's no one else in the game that does something like Dahaka.
Yeah.
Though it is great that when you're playing Cho'Gall, and if you get isolated, only the Cho can't see. So you sort of enter this weird scenario where the Gaul's yelling at you at what to do and you're trying to punch in the right direction.
Which is what Cho'Gall should be, right? Like, they're literally two heads fighting with each other. And they're individual heads, so one could be blinded and the other couldn't, and you would assume that's what's happening, is they're screaming at each other, like, no, go left.
So what you're saying is Cho rework coming in.
I don't know, man. But yeah, I don't know. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with that. I understand where your nightmares are coming from, Kyle, but that's what you get for playing Dota.
Learn all sorts of wrong lessons about the characters. But there is an interesting thing to make a comparison about sort of Dota's mechanics. When a character teleports, they are facing that direction where they land. So if you want to create a body block in that game, you teleport in front of them, but your character is facing in front of them and then has to animation turn around. So in that way, Dota characters are a lot more mobile. There's a lot more mobile abilities because your positioning, your direction, your facing matters more. So imagine Tracer, you run in front of someone and then she's like, oh, and has to like take a second to turn back around and then start shooting. It's a very different kind of style, and hyper mobile carries are less scary because they can make more positional errors.
It's all that balancing act that we're kind of talking about. That gets, I think, ties back into the hitbox thing that Dunk was talking about.
Yeah.
Well, shall we move into the balance update that hit yesterday?
I think so.
All right. Hanzo. Yeah, of course he got nerfed a little bit.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, well, that was a fast turnaround on Hanzo, right? Everyone just being like, oh, no, you don't take Hanzo. Why would you ever take Hanzo? To Hanzo all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hanzo is an interesting case. Like, I don't think anyone's going to argue he didn't need nerfs, but the buff that made him really playable, I think, was the fact that his trait got increased range, which makes it way more usable. It went from, like, basically you don't have a trait to, like, this is actually an extremely good escape mechanism, like, because it got so much more consistent with the increased range, and the arc of his scatter arrow got reduced, so that ability got way more consistent, too. So I just don't think they appreciated how much those consistency improvements would add power level to Hanzo's kit. It's that, like, age-old thing where, like, oh, is this a quality of life improvement, or is this a straight-up buff? And it turns out those were huge buffs to Hanzo. So they definitely needed to pull some of that back. I'm glad they did. I think he's still really good, but I haven't had much time to actually see because he's still getting banned every game.
And they didn't mess with the things that you just mentioned, right? Like, they didn't they didn't make the cone on Scatter Arrow wider. They just took away some of the damage. They left his trait alone.
Yeah.
Which is good, because I would argue it's both. I mean, it turned out to be a buff, but it was also a quality of life improvement. I mean, Scatter Arrow was, it was like RNG at the end of the day. Early at Gazlo, when we all realized, oh my god, I can break the meters with Gazlo, but you're not getting any kills because the damage is going all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I think it's an interesting conversation to talk about Hanzo, because he is, for me, too bummerific. And when I saw the Hanzo, I was...
Bummerific?
Bummerific is the official term.
Wait, is that good or bad? I'm having a hard time.
He's a bummer? It's a sadness.
Okay, he's a super bummer. He's bummerific. I got it.
When I saw him in front of a core as Diablo, and I charged him, and he leapt over the entire core, the bummers hit a little hard there. But the real part that interests me about the design of Hanzo is the sharpened arrowheads. And there's this philosophy in MOBA that you don't want to be over CC'd, you should be dead instead. You don't want to enter a fight, get locked down for 10 straight seconds because DPS is too low, and then you die at the end of it. It's better to leap in, receive one stun, and then die to damage very quickly. In a sort of science of fun kind of way. Being dead's not fun, you don't get to play, but either way, if you're going to die in a video game, it should be fast so that you're not lingering and not doing anything ability.
So it shouldn't be a web wrap into a wait for the whole team and watch them wait to kill you.
Exactly.
Okay.
And with sharpened arrowheads reducing the damage or reducing my armor by 20% on something like Diablo, I felt like I was doing the right thing by dodging the skill shots, but ultimately the auto attack would hit me and stop me from wanting to engage, stopping me before I could even play the game in some ways. Mm-hmm. And this isn't a complaint. Like you get it. You charge him with Varian, but he still left because the taunt took too long to activate. Well, use a shift command and now you've got it. It didn't take as long now. And same with Diablo. So there's ways to work around this. I'm interested in that science of fun.
I was going to go into that as well, because you moved right past your comment about the bummer of him leaping over the core, right, as you charge him. And I'm curious, how is that different than a Genji's just swift striking the hell out of dodge when you're trying to engage on a Genji? Is it because Genji's constantly moving, so you kind of expect to miss? Whereas Hanzo's moving at normal movement speed, not jumping around like crazy, and then suddenly he just flies away.
Well, you're also talking to a guy who plays a lot of Uther here. And when it comes to holy shocking and stunning Genji, he's by me in my back line where I'm going to ruin his day, ruining that deflector. Same with Sonya. She wants to get in my back line, spin on everybody. Cancel that spin. No more heals for you. Now she's in trouble. But Hanzo's Chromie. And in the Chromie part of the game, all the way in that back line behind the double tank. And when I get a hold of him, when I've done that hard work to get past all the CC and attack him, He flies away.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. And I think that's why we're seeing balance changes such as this.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I also heard someone on Reddit, and it's always kind of dangerous to sort of enter Reddit for thought processes. But someone said Dragon Arrow is basically a ranged Divine Storm. And that hit me right. I'm like, oh, my heart. Oh, and then you look at Blaze, who does a charging Divine Storm, and you go, oh, my heart. And it makes you wonder a little bit.
Does it, or is it just straight up power creep? Do you just want to yell power creep right now? Because I kind of want to.
But I know Blizzard does the right thing. Like, this is not a game that rots on the vine. This is like, we wait a week and that seems intense to us because our games are different, but they do react. So I'm not saying that it's broken, that I hate it. I'm just saying I'm very curious about where we fix him and what part of that equation needs to change. And I'm curious if you guys have any ideas about what you do to Hanzo.
I mean, in regards to your comment about Uther and Divine Storm, I would rather just see the old and dusties get shined up, get a little love, bring them up to current snuff. Because buffs are always more fun than nerfs, in my mind.
Uther shoots his Holy Radiance and can reactivate it to teleport.
Dude, I was just going to say, Uther shoots Holy Radiance, then he can press Divine Storm and it lands at the Holy Radiance spot.
Yes.
No, combine it with, Combustion's kind of concept. So Combustion, you hit it and you start to charge. But with Uther, when you hit your Divine Storm button, it starts to charge up and you get a little... You get a summoned mount like Paladins now have in World of Warcraft, so you can move faster, and then you can reactivate it to Divine Storm as we currently have.
Dude, but plus the voice line for Divine Storm is so great. The idea of him saying it early while he charges in just gives me the goosebumps.
Wait, yeah, dude, that Paladin ability from WoW, like your Paladin sprint that puts you on a horse is so cool.
It is the only thing keeping Paladins from being the lamest class in World of Warcraft right now, by the way. The fact that they can
right now?
The fact that they can do that.
I mean, we did have a time when Uther could cast Sprint and then run in and cast Divine Storm, and I don't think that was exactly healthy, so I'm not sure making that baseline.
but now you're passing out Divine Storm to everyone and they can do it better than Uther.
Yeah. Hanzo's honestly, Hanzo's arrow is, I think, really busted. Like, that amount of CC coming from your range damage spot on demand like that is just kind of unheard of. Like, we don't really have any other range carry that can on command Stormbolt you, right? Like, as a follow-up to other CC. It's really uncommon unless you're like a mage, which is like Kael'thas, but your range is way lower than Hanzo. I don't know. I think that alt is actually like really, really busted.
Yeah, because to me, in my head, like the only other thing that's close to it is on a similar character is Sylvanas with her Wailing Arrow. And imagine Sylvanas' option between heroics was Wailing Arrow or Hanzo's ultimate. It's like,
you'd always take Hanzo's ultimate.
I'd rather just take the stun. They can keep running away when they're silenced.
Yeah.
So it's interesting food for thought, to say the least. So I like where your head's at, Kyle. Your head is always here, where you're like, I don't want to sensationalize it, but this is what I've been thinking about. Like, so it's you mentioned this earlier today, and I was like, oh my god, I hadn't thought about this, but you're right. It's just a better Divine Storm.
Yeah.
Oh. Meanwhile, I'm dodging all team fights, farming towers, so you know it's not like I'm interacting with it, but.
Very true.
Hey man, he can shoot at you from global.
Yeah, I mean, play of the game is one of the coolest things off, and you know, kind of like BFG. If Dragonair was bad, I might still take it for that chance of feeling that cool at 20.
Okay, no, I was gonna say play the game. Is it that cool to pull off? Because the only thing you have to hit is the actual first skill shot that you've been hitting all game, and then you just hit R again, and you feel cool. You're not doing anything.
That's like people saying, like, and Dahaka dodges all the CC. It's like he was underground. Like, it's not that, but you know, it felt great. Real good.
I've been trying my best to keep my Hanzo hate on the DL, but you just brought it out of me by calling play of the game cool. It's like, no, it's a giant, it's training wheels. It's doing it for you.
Listen, we can rationally talk about balance, but the second you say he's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's where I draw the line.
The second you say that a skillless level 20 talent is cool, I'm coming after you, Kyle. I'm coming after you. And anyway, let's move on from Hanzo because I'm sure he's going to come up again when we mention HGC. But Sergeant Hammer also kind of a nerf list this week with the healing on regenerative bio steel getting knocked down, and also the range on graduating range being reduced as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have any comment about this. This kind of changes when they come from out of the blue are almost always because Blizzard has some data that we don't have access to that's telling them that, like, this is oppressive in X circumstances, so we're going to nerf it, right? No real dev comments about it. They're just basic number tweaks. So, this doesn't affect me in basically any way. So, okay.
It's affecting 6% of the people. But I guess quite a bit. That's the popularity of Hammer on Hot Slogs at the moment. But she has the highest win rate in the video game.
Yep. Man, I wish we had an actual API so I could have an indication of whether Hammer is actually good or if it's just like, there's one dude who's really diligent about uploading his Sergeant Hammer wins. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, Kyle, because that it is... It's worth pointing out, like, a lot of times when we see the balance adjustments, we're always sitting here being like, and they're changing it for esports and it's messing with my at-home games. Thanks, guys. This is the one time where I'm like, I'm looking at Hot Slogs. I'm like, who's the top hero? Oh, it's Sergeant Hammer. Who got nerfed this week seemingly for no reason? Sergeant Hammer. But it doesn't happen very often. But also, I mean,
it doesn't.
On Hot Slogs, you can also look at games played. And while Sergeant Hammer isn't like bottom of the barrel, like Probius, for example, is in the top five. But there's only 720 games logged in the last 7 days on Probius, whereas Sergeant Hammer's sitting at over 2K. But then you have someone like Sylvanas that has over 10,000 games logged. And it's like, I trust that Sylvanas number a lot more because of the amount of games logged.
And this just came out yesterday, so we have no modern stats. Those two Cho'Gall guys had a real good day yesterday, and there's not much to get into.
Those two Cho'Gall guys... it sounds like the title of a really bad Seth Rogen comedy. I don't know why. Speaking of Sylvanas, she's in the nerf pile as well. Base max health down, health regen down, shadow dagger. Guess what? It's got one more second tacked onto its cooldown. And then Lost Soul had its cooldown reduction per hero reined in as well. And you feel that. I mean, you look at it and it's like, oh, it's a quarter of a second, but it's like a quarter of a second per hero hit. That adds up.
Yeah, on five or even like six, if they have anyone who clones, like a Nova clone or a Misha, or like a Samuro, this is a big deal. I really dislike these changes. We talked about this for quite a while, actually, yesterday on Town Hall. But to sum it up, my impression of the changes is I really despise these changes because I think it even further cements the fact that Sylvanas is basically just a walking trait. And I don't like that. I find it really frustrating. So... these changes don't adjust her trait. They just adjust everything but that, which makes me frustrated.
She's what's taking me on to Jaina at the moment, too, because like Greymane behind the wall, you get in some auto attacks, you dive her. That isn't what Jaina is capable of in half a second, in the moment that you can explode the Sylvanas before she gets away. Most sustained attackers simply can't do it. And that means that if you respond, it was the wrong choice.
Yeah. Yeah, we were in a game like 2 hours before the show, and you were on Genji, and the Sylvanas hunting wave towards you, and you were just like, "Oh my god, she hunting wave!" You were just so excited because you got to kill her.
I've seen a lot of that this week, just really weird haunted waves. So I gotta assume it's kind of this gray mate thing going on. That there's a lot of excited people, but they got nerfed, but they're still excited.
fair enough.
Hadn't read the patch notes yet.
To throw it back to you, Dunk, I mean, with the trade, not to make you retread comments you've already made, but I mean, do you think Sylvanas just needs to hit the rework pile?
I actually think Sylvanas has a really, really cool kit outside of her trade. I mean, like, her kit is very fun to play. She's got interesting playmaking potential, at least once you get Windrunner at 13, like, you open up a whole lot of possibilities for cool things to do. I don't think she really needs a full rework. I just think her trait needs a little tweak. Like, that's all I would do. And then I think she'd be awesome.
Would you make it so that she just turns off either buildings or monsters, not both?
I think you'd have to experiment to find a nice middle ground of, like, appeasing the people who really love Sylvanas' trait right now, but making it so it's not, you know, like, really oppressive to the game state and allows you to balance her to be more of a participant hero rather than like take advantage of an already won situation hero. If you were going to do that, you could keep some of the like building disabling things. One thing I thought was a really neat idea was from Twitch chat, just like if her trait's on a building, it can't target heroes. So like it enables dives and stuff, but it doesn't let objectives just end the game on the first objective, which I think is something a lot of people find frustrating. So changes like that. I mean, there's a lot of things you could try out, but just the way it is, man, I think they have to like design maps around it. I mean, she basically single-handedly killed Haunted Mines. She makes Braxis like unbearable. I don't know.
Well, anything that kills Haunted Mines is a hero in my book, but yeah, I see your point.
Okay, I'm not blaming her for that one, but praise Sylv, okay?
No. You're absolutely right. And I'm biased here. I like playing Sylvanas as a teamfight hero, so if they nerf her trait in any way, shape, or form, maybe they can dial up her damage even more.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'd be into that. Last nerfed hero I want to talk about, which I would file under... Why now is Sonya. Sonya, basic attack damage down, poison spear nerfed, nerves of steel nerfed. This seems late.
That's the tough thing about it.
This is interesting because remember, wasn't the last nerf on Sonya like all they did was nerf poison spear from 150 to 125, right?
Right. And afterwards, now, we were like, on this show going, I guess you still take poison spear.
Yeah, and now they're like, oh, well, the poison spear nerf wasn't enough, so let's nerf that, and also her attack damage, and also her good level 16 talent. Like, that's a lot of nerfs to pile onto her. I think she's still fine, but whereas before I was really excited to have a Sonya on my team, now I think maybe I would just generally rather have, like, a Kerrigan or a Ragnaros or something. Like, I think this might actually hit the breakpoint where she's just not quite as good as the other... like, yeah, off-tank bruisers.
It's wild that you mentioned Kerrigan and Rag, because Sonya had already, for me, become a map pick, and the only map I really was taking her on was Infernal Shrines.
Yeah, she's probably still fine there. Yeah,
yeah, but you know who's better? Kerrigan and Ragnaros.
Yeah, Kerrigan and... Actually, they're both pretty dirty on that map, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Sonya has the advantage against on those two heroes in the sense that she can do mercs faster and more safely, like, in terms of health. Sustained, so that's definitely an advantage, and mercs are really important in the current game state. Like, we were talking about how people want to do early mercs and stuff, having a good hero to do that is really powerful. But I'm not sure it makes up for her weaknesses, but she's still probably fine. She's just not like the de facto better choice then, you know, which is good.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
And I wonder if too we'll see a change in play style, because Sonya's were wrongfully sneaky. Like, that's bad roleplay for a barbarian to be hiding in a bush to the last moment when you land the poison spear and then slam, slam, and run away in the other direction. Like, get in my face for an extended period of time and scream at me.
Yeah.
What we got a lot. I know a lot of Sonya mains in our audience. 16. I mean, this seems like an esports change because you aren't destroying it. You're reducing the amount of time that it's active, which means in a focus fire environment, it's still pretty good. Yeah. But in our home environment where one guy hits you and then 2 seconds later, somebody hits you and that 5 second window really won out in EuroLeague. What do we do at 16? And why is it not imposing presence, please?
I don't think it's imposing presence. I think if I had to guess, no escape is probably the best 16. The difference between having a constant 10% and 20% bonus move speed is actually really, really big in terms of your ability to effectively like stick onto a target. Think about the difference between playing against a Vala with the mana talent at one. I forget what it's called, where when you're at full stacks, you regen mana and have 10% more speed. That's like the default multi-shot build. Like that speed Vala is actually noticeably harder to hit with skill shots than like a normal max hatred stack Vala. So you apply that same concept to Sonya, but instead of her dodging your skill shots, she's just in Wrath running down your backline. Like that's scary. So I think No Escape was actually good before, and I could definitely see it being a go-to. Against burst damage, you're still going to want Nerves of Steel, though. You're totally right.
It's a good way to think of it. Is that, you know, this talent was good, it's just that the other talent was kind of busted.
Yeah. I mean, the 5 second duration thing is actually a big nerf to unfocused team fighting, because it's not just that the duration of the shield is gone, so you're mitigating less damage, but that was also a time where like people didn't really want to hit you with things, and you could like regenerate health from Whirlwind or from your healer's heal over times, like without getting chipped away. So a lot of times you'd like pop Nerves of Steel and the enemy team would like kind of stop hitting you so much. It'd block a bunch of splash damage, and 5 seconds later you'd come out with like actually 30% more health than you pop Nerves of Steel with because of your healer and like your Whirlwind healing. So 2 seconds less on that is actually a pretty big deal.
Yeah, that's another good point to bring up, but the manipulation of the fight. Because if they are paying attention and they react to it, all of a sudden their damage is split. If they're not paying attention when they're attacking you, they're just wasting cooldowns.
Yeah.
I don't want to like the Sonya change, but you're selling me on it, Dunk.
Yeah, I think she's still fine.
All right.
And I can go back to having my heal at 7. I never felt good about Poison Spear. I always felt like it was more barbarian flavor-wise to just like yell and heal.
Right? I do miss ferocious healing, man. That was one of the first auto lock talents I think I ever had in this game. It was like, I'm just gonna heal on 7,
because that's what everyone thinks about. You know, you run into a barbarian, they stab you with a poison, you cough behind a door while they walk away,
and then you die. You drink from your well, but you can't drink fast enough. You just die at the well.
Oh God!
I'm so thirsty.
That's killing me,
barbarian
today, Kyle.
To me. I don't know about you guys.
Pretty much.
Now I'm talking about our next barbarian, Valera.
Right. Last time you were on the show, Dunk, you said that you just weren't sure if there's a way to make stealth heroes in this game viable for esports and not broken in pickup games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Valera has found herself in the buff pile, getting back some love that was taken away from her just a few weeks ago. What do you think?
So this is a whole slew of buffs to a lot of talents that should have never, ever been picked. And when stuff like this happens, it's either like it doesn't really matter because you shouldn't be picking those talents still, or maybe someone finds a build that's actually really broken using these new talents. I'm not sure which of these it is yet. The thing is, silence is just by far the best opener, I think, by default, right? Like the silence duration is super high. It adds damage to your combo. It had the best talents to go along with it because, you know, bonus auto attack damage on a target that was silenced. Like, to me, it feels like one of the problems actually lies in her talent tree design, where what they want from Valera is they want this idea of a hero where like, oh, I'm going to pick my opener based on the situation. But the talent tree they designed is like, I'm going to pick a bunch of talents that have synergy with whatever opener I want to use. And I think that's where some of the conflict comes from, because to me, like talents like I forget what it's called. The one where Garrote makes you do extra damage to auto attacks, right? to me, that should have been a talent where, like, after any opener, your next X auto attacks deal bonus damage, right? Like, then it works and it doesn't take away from that situationality. And her level 13 talents make you want to spec into one opener as well. And these changes don't really change anything. So I could see a new build coming out, but I don't think so. I think Valera was too far in the garbage pile for these fixes to be enough.
Has relit the flame for a lot of people, though, and I am seeing her frequently, and it does sadden me at the moment.
Yeah.
Stealth characters are so difficult in this game because, in the end, I think shared XP removes the focus that we had in other MOBAs. If some invisible dude is four levels up above his entire enemy team,
yeah,
you're going to put everything you have into buying stuff that's good at beating that guy. And you have that freedom to buy, which is a whole nother conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, in this game, if you didn't draft a hero that has a way of seeing Valera, or you're not really good with your skill shots, you're in trouble.
Also, you can't really like pick on one person on the enemy team to keep that person down, right? Like, you have that concept in other MOBAs where it's an individual economy. So if you have a stealthy and you know there's like a hyper carry on the enemy team, your stealthy's job can be shutting that person down. In this game, like, you can kind of shut down offlaners, but I mean, they're usually like ultra tanky, designed to resist ganks, and then like you can't just shut someone out of the economy. That's not how it works, you know? So I don't know. They have to be good at team binding, but if they're good at team binding, they're probably frustrating. Stealth heroes are just a big bag of worms, man. I do not envy people in charge of trying to make those things healthy, fun, viable for competitive, like, because the characters are cool. It's just, man, tough.
Yeah, I'm starting to see Zeratul again out of nowhere. That was a weird thing I noticed this week.
I think that was just the skills finally got good enough. I don't see any Void Prisons. It's all Might of the Narazim.
Yeah.
And I think they spared us their fancy play and stuck to quick match through the holiday. And now they're finally getting back into rank.
Makes sense. Zul up next with a level 4 Grim Scythe buff, a level 7 Harvest Vitality buff, and Jailers. Also, actually, no, sorry, they were brought down. Their bonus attack and movement speed got dinged.
Yeah, I think Jailers was like the go-to on that lane every time, no matter what. So they're just kind of like trying to tweak that a little and fix it. I'm not really sure about the state of Zul. I don't see a lot of Zul's. I just don't have the data on him because it seems like everyone's picking other specialists constantly now. He has insane wave clear. I don't think he can be an awful hero, but I'm not really sure where he fits.
I played him a couple times this week in the last 2 days after this change went live, but I wasn't building him any differently. To speak, I mean, Kyle, you brought up at the top of the show that like your thing now is to just dive bomb towers, and I was doing that and it was working really well. And we crushed. That being said, I think I was the only one on my team that died, and I died a bunch of times, but I still managed to get us far enough ahead in the XP that I felt like just shouting Worth at the top of my lungs, but I couldn't help but feeling that if I was Nazebo or Zagara, I would have survived and still gotten towers down at roughly the same times.
Yeah, and it's not something that we're really supporting right now. The solo laner is either this Jaina that isn't really solo lane, just goes by, bombs it, grabs the orb, runs away, or something like Blaze and Leoric and all these guys who are resilient to the gank. And Zul's dead. You know, you can shade yourself up for a little bit and give it a good run, but ultimately you don't have the burst to get rid of that. You don't have your Blackheart's Bay to maybe pad out your win rate if that was still viable. And ultimately, when it comes to team fights, I'm always a little disappointed in Zul because I feel like I'm just dropping off a package. I run in, I'm like, three abilities. Well, actually, depending on the fight, maybe two. And then... Sweet, you guys win? No? Oh, well, I'm going back to lane because I'm spent. I'm tired.
Yeah.
He's clunky in that way, right? He's not just in the way he moves, but his kit, it's lumbering. It feels, that's exactly what it feels like. You show up, you've got a few things to get done, but it doesn't feel like burst, even though you're kind of spending it in a burst-like fashion.
Yeah.
And then you're just out. You're just like, well, my cooldowns are rolling. Yeah, and God help you if there's not a lane. You're not even contributing with skeletons.
I mean, in that way, he's one of my favorite bronze teaching characters because his cooldowns are long on his ults. Poison Nova, Skeletal Mages, 90 seconds each. You can learn a lot using a character like this. Push the lanes, do your specialist job, and upon cooldown, join the team fight. You're off cooldown? Excellent. Go back to your other job. And when you start thinking like that, Malfeel starts making a lot of sense to bronzers.
Hmm.
Yeah,
and I don't know. A lot of other heroes, Kael'thas will start falling into place.
I want him to have a mechanic like a meat wagon. I want him to be able to pick up corpses of minions and just bring him with him into a fight.
Ooh,
drop the corpses down and res skeletons like in a jungle fight or something. That'd be wonderful.
A bit morbid, but I like the idea of him just loading bodies on his shoulders and making his way to that Blackheart's Bay turn in, just plopping them down, casting jailers, and there they go.
Yeah, that's...
you have a Zul that spends like the first 4 minutes of the game just carrying corpses to the turn in from the nearest lane. And then like at some point you have a team fight there and there's just suddenly like 40 skeletons.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know. There's just some about it, man. I don't know. It's like everyone else with summons, they can summon it whenever. Like Asmodan, like here's a demon, Zagara, here's roaches and hydras. But Zul, like I get it, it works for flavor, but it sure does make him feel unimpactful whenever there's not a lane to be fought inside of.
Yeah, definitely.
Moving right along, Brightwing. Base max health and health regen increase. So get out there, you fairy dragons. You still don't have a cool skin, but at least you've got more health.
Yeah, this is fine. This is probably just another stat thing where Blizzard was like, well, Brightwing got hit a little too hard by the healer nerfs, so a little max HP goes a long way on a hero where like you're constantly self-healing and you have spell mitigation, shields for yourself, so I think that's pretty nice. Brightwing is... I don't ever see her, but I don't feel like she's bad when I do see her. So I'm not sure why I don't ever see people picking her, you know?
I don't know. I think it's that... I saw this, and the thing I thought of was... And it's something I haven't thought of Brightwing in this way, but because of the fact that she needs to be alive for her heals to function, like other healers can just spend all their mana... And they would have had to go back to recoup that mana. They would have been out of the fight anyway. Mm-hmm. Whereas Brightwing can't really speed up the way she heals. I mean, neither really can Lucio. I mean, he has a way to kind of speed it up for a moment. But at the end of the day, if Lucio's dead, if Brightwing is dead, there's just no more healing going on. Whereas with many of the other mana-based healers, you can get those numbers out before you die.
Mm, yeah. Makes sense.
And then there's Tyrande, who got a whopping 2 damage, basic attack damage increase.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Cool. Maybe one of these days you'll lure me back onto Tyrande, Heroes team. Maybe.
I mean, if they just keep buffing her by 2 damage a patch, eventually
we'll get there.
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
I want...
It's fine. I think Tyrande was, like, not arguably she was undertuned, I think. So I think that's fine.
I almost said I want old Shadowstalk back, and then I realized that's a loaded statement. There's been multiple old versions of Shadowstalk at this point.
True.
And then there's Blaze, which, my God, so many talent changes, and I just want to start with, of course, another bunker change, because this is Wings of Liberty.
Pretty much. I don't know. I like it. I think he needed some love.
Yeah, a lot of this is just talent diversity incentivization. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of surprised we didn't see a change, just personally, to Adhesive Petroleum, because it just makes the character easier. I want those choices. I want my Blaze on the enemy side to be thinking, are they oiled or are they on fire? What do I want in this situation?
I disagree. I feel like Adhesive Petroleum should just be built in, baked in. Like,
do that instead, right? Like, make it one or the other.
Because I feel like you're being, until you have that, you're just being punished for setting your oil on fire.
And that's maybe a character choice of mine. Like, I don't like Kerrigan because it's not dynamic. I pull people and stun them. Yeah, you know, I can do it in different orders, but kind of did it wrong. Alarak, I can do that in any direction. Sometimes I'll boost myself in and then do a Discord strike because that position is favorable. And now I still got the hit off. I feel like Tyrael. Tyrael feels so whimsical and creative in the way you play.
Hmm.
You're such a freaking hipster, Kyle.
And you're saying Blaze doesn't?
I I'm sad that the interaction between the oil and the flame isn't more interesting, because the choice right now with adhesive petroleum seems to be everything should be on fire all the time.
Mm.
Which Blaze likes. Yeah, that I'm not saying that's a bad role play for him.
Mm-hmm.
But getting rid of that choice at 4 just limits some of the creativity. I'd like to see a Blaze and go, that's a good Blaze. I struggle to find what a good Blaze is. Outside of a 2-level-up Blaze who can jet propulsion in.
I disagree. A good Blaze is one that lands his damn jet propulsion.
Well,
because there are plenty of Blazes that don't. But I would defend, I mean, your comment there about the, what's the word I'm looking for? Variety, I guess, in ability use. Because his oil is on charges, you can still get more creative with it than you can with something like a Kerrigan combo.
True. And the way, and I'm talking about my experience in Diamond right now of Incinerator Gauntlets. That's the next pickup, which removes the gameplay element too, because now your auto attacks light that stuff on fire. You're standing on top of it. The choice is gone.
Hmm. I think Incinerator Gauntlets is like really weak, actually.
It is. But. And here with the balance, too, they've made it clear that, you know, Grill and Kill was a little too popular, and even Crossfire need a little bit of an update.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my experience and what I was seeing, which is a very blobby kind of unelegant playstyle. And granted, he's still brand new.
Mm-hmm. I'm really surprised you're seeing Incinerator Gauntlets. It's just like Grill and Kill all day long with a lot of Blazes that I've seen. And that's how I play them.
Interesting.
Dude, the Ignite lasts 2 seconds longer. It's gross.
It's a great, it's a superb talent, but this is my experience. And I'm not shopping for a tank. I love my supports and sustain attackers.
I'm not even joking. I just pulled up the talent for Grill and Kill. I forgot there was a damage increase on there. I just thought the duration.
Yeah, it's just 2 seconds.
I thought the 2 seconds is enough. Why is there a damage increase on there? Mm-hmm. All right, sorry. No, I'm going aggro now. Why are you taking Incinerator Gauntlets? That's insane.
I'm not. It's not me.
Okay. All right.
It just adds to the madness.
All right. Now I'm just flabbergasted.
But I mean, there's something too with the way we're moving in this game, particularly with auto attackers, that make these interesting talents like nanomachine coding really fall flat for me right now. And same reason I kind of was dissing earlier, imposing presence. We have so many ground effects, it's so dangerous to stand still right now that even if I'm Vala, Lunar, or some sort of major auto attacker, I'm not usually auto attacking at the maximum speed in the first place. And if I'm chasing you, let's say I walk across nanomachine coding and my attack speed is reduced by 40%. This attack isn't, the one in my hand. It flies through. And then I reposition and your 40% deduction didn't matter because I had to chase you anyway. And I want that interaction. Like that's why I'm tough on Blaze right now, because I want these interactions. I think they're very cool. Hmm. But we're simply seeing lazy play.
I mean, I'm not going to argue that I think his build is kind of solved for the most part.
And it's not lazy play if it's the correct thing to do. You know, that's
right. Right. I mean, I've just never heard you have this kind of discussion about Sylvanas, who has been built the same way for years.
That's interesting, right? And that's probably because, one, when we talked about Sylvanas, it was 3 years ago, and we didn't have the language and the words built up in our community to have that kind of layered discussion. And also, she's in that sort of taxes part of my mind, where you just deal with Sylvanas. You're going to complain about it? It happens, dude. Like, what? Your goldfish died. Sorry. You know, the buildings are gone. It's the trait. And in order to play this video game, I have to accept that as a truth, or that'll be a constant frustration. That's just silly.
All right. I was going to name this episode Bummerific, but I may name it Death and Sylvanas. Yeah. No, that's definitely what this episode is getting titled. Oh, thank you for that, Kyle. Well, wonderful. Wonderful. Well, before we move into strategy and talk a little HGC, let's thank our patrons supporting this podcast over at patreon.com/ITN. Thank you all very much. We have a new producer Dirk, thank you, dude. Also on this episode, thank you to Joshua G, Randall A, Jonathan P, Amanda W, and Scott C-E. Two initials there. But seriously, thank you very much. If you enjoy Into the Nexus, if you get something out of the show and you want to give something back in return, the Patreon is the best way to support us. You can give whatever works for you. And that's the reason we have guests like Dunk and Jeff Kanata on. Why can't I think of Jeff's name all of a sudden? Is because of goals that we've set on the Patreon. We actually get to pay our guests who show up on the podcast. And that's awesome because we remember just begging people to come on when we did a StarCraft show. And sometimes it worked. And others, I mean, Dunk, you'd be here anyway, but we probably shouldn't admit that.
Yeah, don't tell them.
But seriously, thank you to our patrons and to all future patrons. Go and check that out. Now let's move into strategy and discuss a little HGC.
Choose a talent.
Choose a talent.
Talent? Ah, that seems generous.
I have a PhD in PvP.
I'm so glad that you put this in the notes today, Kyle, because I recall also looking at the official Heroes website this week and thinking to myself, their posts have gotten surprisingly intense.
They have, though. Yeah. They are written by esports professionals, so they can have a lot of likes and you knows in them. So it's kind of funny to see the 20-year-olds writing the articles, but they're real good. They're actually really intense. They are very factual to HGC. What I want to do today is put them to the Hero League test and see what we thought of them in that environment.
Okay. So if you don't know what we're already talking about, just punch into your browser, esports.heroesofthestorm.com, and start looking at their recent blog posts. We're going to be talking today about the four-man split, about when, where, and why you should cheese a tower early, which Kyle has already kind of talked about today. Opening moves and diving into the diverse support meta. I'm just not used to seeing anything put out officially by Blizzard that is this concrete or seeming like it's giving you an answer, really. Because anytime you talk to Blizzard, like especially with Heroes, they're always talking about talent diversity and how they don't want there to be a right answer. And yet on the official esports website, there seems to be multiple articles pointing to right answers.
Well, I like that this is definitely a step towards, I mean, first off, the content is really nice and it's good for the player base, I think. But I also think it's acceptable because it's coming from the esports team, right, for Heroes rather than like the dev team. Here is a design philosophy post about what we want you guys to be doing. It's a here is what the pros are doing and why is it good post, which is different. And I think it's why it's okay and Blizzard is okay with it because it's so good.
Yeah. That reminds me, though, strats from the devs. Jade Barton, we did it. We won our Reign of Destruction game, and we used it on top of buildings, like you said we should. Oh, we had him on last week, and he was just like, Reign of Destruction's amazing. Use it like a Hyperion. And we did, and it was fantastic.
And he also said, get a Varian to protect you and get the Banner of Dalaran, which I'll be happy to report. I filled that role.
Whoa.
It was disgusting. Yeah. Keeps melted. Just
Max
melted.
Max Spellpower Gul'dan, I never thought of Banner of Dalaran, because like when you do go Reign of Destruction, you have to go Spellpower at 7 and at 16. But I never thought about, are there any other sources? Oh, Nano Boosted?
You could
Oh, yeah. No, it was seriously like rolling up to the keep with your own siege weaponry. It's like, well, I brought my catapult with me and a trebuchet and a couple ballistas, and they're all run by this one green dude in a purple robe.
We were fighting a Illidan, and of course, you know, we're going to do the strat, and I skip Haunt, and he's just flipping all over me the whole time. But I think it was Malfurion was just, you know, hitting the dots as I reined as hard as I could.
Yep. Huh. Yeah, the taunt, I'm tooting my own horn, too. The taunt kept that Illidan in check.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah, that was
good
fun.
Stuff, yeah.
I hope they're listening. All right. So back to the non-dev strategies. So let's start with the four-man split. They put a post up talking about the four-man split this week. Is this applicable in our Hero League games?
Yeah, definitely. So four-man splitting is still really common. It's not as common in non-pro games, I think some of the like the shift from we're going to grind down your tower health if you don't have enough wave clear to like our four men is about kill pressure, I think is totally correct. The way I've seen it change in how it works is before it was like you get advantage in the rotation and it lets your minions get to the wall and run that them out of ammo and then the wall dies. Whereas now it's like if we have an advantage in the four man, we actually want to like set up a gank bush or something. And once we secure a kill, then we just zerg the towers ourselves because that's way more efficient is how it feels. So definitely think four man split is still really important, but the goal of the four man is a little more kill oriented, I would say, than before.
And it's a bit cooler now too. They give Murden as an example that he can be a part of these four man ganks. It's no longer a death ball. It's by isolation. You may not destroy the towers, but Murden being able to create a body block and do that stun creates a kill, which gives mm-hmm. you the energy to get up on those buildings. And if you're failing, Murden can go gank the solo lane.
Yeah.
But, and then you sort of take that to the next level and you counter it. You have to be able to survive the 1v1 you're having and Murden coming by, which is why our solo laners became Sonya, Leoric, Arthas, Greymane, Malthiel in this article, which really gets rid of all the bullies. Our old bullies are Zagaras and Alarax, who can't drop a lane fast enough maybe to do the Jaina style and simply don't have the escape to survive the Murden gank.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Where does Leoric land in this for you? Because I'm like, I have to hit somebody with my skeletal swing to get the reset. And if no one's there, I don't lane clear fast enough. So, but I still love the old bone zone, man.
I think Leoric is good, but he's not as good outside of competitive, I think, right now, at least. Like, I feel like before, there was like this Leoric build that was all drain, and then like you hit 16 and suddenly you just had overwhelming pressure on the enemy front line. And now I think most of the orcs are going like the damage mitigation ghost spooky thing. And it's powerful, but it's not a really obvious effect, which hurts how impactful people think Leoric is. And also like, it's just, he doesn't control fights as much. Like before, you just drain a tank and the tank has to run away. That's controlling the space of a fight. Spooky ghosting whole enemy team still kind of controls the fight, but not really like in the same sense. So I think that's why he doesn't feel as impactful, even though he's still good. And also I see people picking Leoric into like not double tank, but I don't think you should ever pick Leoric basically unless the enemy team has like a real double tank. Because right now, I think tank plus a bruiser is really strong, but Leoric doesn't excel against tank plus a damage bruiser like a Rag or a Kerrigan or an Alarak. That's not where he's great at. He's great against the full double tank.
Yeah, Tychus falls into that same problem too, where one tank, awesome, but two, you're going to get CC'd out and probably not know who to target in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're pulled in too many different directions. Okay. All right, so the four man can be applied with some asterisks. I don't see a lot of Murden ganks in my games, period. So I probably don't need to really worry about that.
Brutal. ETCs hunting you down and just when you thought you were safe.
I've seen a lot of the ETCs, that's for sure. That was something he's been on and off a lot recently, and I've been adjusting to him being gone very quickly, and now he's back all of a sudden. I'm like, oh shit, I forgot how to deal with power slide.
Yeah.
But back to cheesing those early towers. I mean, Kyle, you've already talked about this quite a bit today. So I think already through the course of conversation today, I think it's safe to say that this is something that can absolutely work in your games at home.
Yeah, what's really frightening about this article is they say basically that Sylvanas is not good at this because her DPS is too low. What you should do is mitigate the damage with higher damage characters like Zarya. Zarya Morales is the big example here. And I have no idea how that would work. I've never seen anything like this. Do you just slam your face in there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah. It happens. It's pretty common in competitive, actually, to have like Zarya just like walk up to a wall and like pop shield and then Your healer heals off the damage that comes afterwards, but your team zergs down the tower before it does meaningful damage. And Morales is actually really good at that. The thing I don't like about suggesting people to cheese towers early is I think the most difficult part of early killing a side lane tower, the most difficult part is not actually like killing the tower or anything. It's having your team back off in time, in a reasonable fashion, in an orderly fashion, so they don't all get killed on their exit. So I actually don't really like when my team goes for stuff like this, because I think there's just too high of a probability of like we zerg a tower. And even if we get the tower right, if walking out three people die because we're all like running away and aren't fighting properly and like we're scared because we run their side of the map, like it's just such a high risk strategy for uncoordinated play, I feel like.
Okay, so here's our first kind of big difference between what you're seeing in the pro play and how to apply it at home. So do you agree that like trying to prioritize towers is definitely something that you can bring into your Hero League games, but maybe a hero like Sylvanas does work because you're not trying to maximize the speed of your damage that much. You're more interested on getting out of there safely and not having to involve too many of your other friends.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I don't really like the full commitment style of doing this like you see in competitive, because it works in competitive. Everyone can back off in a coordinated manner. But I think Sylv is great at this in like Hero League and stuff. The thing is, you don't need to commit five people either. Like with Sylv, you can take one or two other people with you and kill the wall still really fast, but you're not like completely putting all of your eggs in that basket. Like you're not going to have as many people caught out. You should be able to escape pretty easily. Like you'll have people to cover the other lanes, because that's a problem too when you try this in uncoordinated environments. So yeah. Just get out in time. If you want to do this, make sure you spam those retreat pings or whatever it takes to get your team to walk away before the entire enemy team collapses.
I wish people listened to my retreat pings. That'd be nice. That'd be really nice. Not that I'm not guilty of ignoring my...
I mean, the real problem is that the mercs aren't active, and when you're getting lower leagues to motivate, the best thing you can do is to say, let's stop this dangerous activity. How about this merc camp? And everyone's like, let's go do that.
Mercs are great. That's
the best retreat ping is a merc ping.
Wait, that's actually genius.
Kyle's been preaching this for over a year, and it hasn't stopped being a good piece of advice. Mm. And since I play with Kyle all the time, I know what you say. You say, let's give them something interesting. Give them something interesting, like jangle the keys. Look over here, guys.
That's too good, man.
I'm not smack talking. Like, this is just general. Like, it doesn't matter about League. You're literally, in pickup games, in any video game, it is about you. How efficiently can you herd cats?
And true.
It works. It works here. So... what about their opening moves, the one about how to know if you're going to win that level one fight?
I really like this, written by Mike Udall. He gave a equation that we can use: count roots and stuns and avoid the early fight if you're down by two. I really like this. It's a simple way, and he gives the example of Alarak, Stitches, Garrosh, Junkrat, the big displacers. But in general, if you simply don't have the CC and you need to get to seven for your cleanse, don't have the fight in the first place.
And that's the great thing about that advice, is it's not just for level one. He's saying, like, if you're down two abilities that can control the battleground, wait until you have cleanse.
Yeah. I think that's really important. The level one fight is kind of just tradition at this point. I don't know. People just do it without thinking at all. Everyone run to the middle, fight it out, and that way if someone dies at level one, you can call GG and not feel bad. Like, I don't really know. This is a really good guide to talk about the level one. Like, he points out the important things like displacement effects, CC, counting, all that sort of stuff. Absolutely ultra important. Totally agree with this. Like, don't fight if you don't have hard CC at level one, basically. There are a lot of heroes that require getting to level 10 to have their hard CC, and you shouldn't have a 5v5. The reason you run to mid, that I think has gone over in one of the other articles. Yeah, the opening moves 5v5 mid. It kind of ties into this, I think. So there is a good reason to go to the mid as 5, and the article talks about it. But being in the center of the map allows you to respond to like side events more quickly, which is really important. If the enemy team is, for example, cheesing your sidewall, then that allows you to rotate. I think people just started doing this level one fight because they were all there anyway when neither team chose to cheese. And it's kind of just continued happening at this point. So
that reactionary...
definitely still run to mid, but then don't fight if you don't have the advantage. Just use the positioning advantage from being in mid to go to the side lanes if necessary.
This is a type of incremental knowledge I feel is very useful, because what you just talked about there, that reactionary play that you can do, like you said, if they're cheesing a sidewall.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever really ever thought about that. It's the sidewall starts getting cheesed, the team starts going, I just follow them. And yeah. I'm sure I'm not alone in this. I'm sure a lot of other people just kind of go with the flow. It's like, well, this needs to be taken care of. And at no point did I really think, boy, it's a good thing we did that stupid middle fight like we always do.
And in the healer league scenario, the middle fight's really useful because I need to know if my healer even likes me, if they are going to give it up for the gray main, you know, and or they do they like healing themselves? You learn a lot about personality there. In, you know, pro scene, get them quests done.
Yeah. I mean, there are arguments for and against the fight, but basically the more displacement they have and the more hard CC they have, the more risky it is to fight, regardless of whether other advantages you might get from it.
Yeah. All right, the last one that we want to talk about that they posted is called Diving Into the Diverse Support Meta. They talk about the solo support meta. They talk about Korean Uther, European Rhaegar, North American Lucio.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm glad you're on the show today, Dunk.
This is actually really fascinating. I love talking about this kind of thing because I think this really shows a lot of insight into the regions. And there's like really good reasoning behind everything that happens. Like the Korean Uther emphasis is like beautiful because it ties in a lot with the like hyper carry elements that they tend to have, where like all the eggs go in one gray main basket or one Li Ming basket. Uther's fantastic for that. They generally have faster fights. They're way more about blowing up one target than, for example, North America, where yeah, you can blow up one target, but Lucio's fantastic in NA. Because the damn, like, it's a maybe not quite as fast fight oriented. It's not quite as, you know, punish the one guy. So this is actually really interesting. I think Uther is fantastic in competitive, but I struggle to advise people to pick Uther in uncoordinated games, even though I think he is good, because you just can't trust people to use your D shield well. It's my big concern. Like, every time I cast D-Shield on someone and they walk away from the fight, I just die a little more inside. And so that's why I don't really advise Uther that much in Hero League, but he's super powerful. And I love the differences between the regions in this respect.
Yeah, it's really highlighted by the 0% win rate of Lucio in Korea because they are so targeted. They will get on Lucio immediately. He will use his sound barrier to save his life. And then they retarget once it's on cooldown. Whereas in America, we have a 63% win rate with that. And our fights, the statistic was about 5 seconds longer than other regions.
Yeah, here, that's pretty cool.
And here I was feeling unique in the fact that I really enjoyed Lucio and I'm pretty solid on him. Nope, no, I'm just another North American.
Yeah, I think the spread healing has a lot of added value on Hero League, especially like Stukov, Lucio. I think both get big plus signs in terms of like Hero League efficacy. Brightwing too, you know, in the environment of competitive play where the focus fire is absolutely fantastic microsecond decisions, like, yeah, those healers are going to struggle. In uncoordinated games, they're so much better because you're not punished as hard for not having that good cleanse, for like not having that cleanse. You're not punished as hard for having your healing be evenly spread on your team, that sort of thing.
And now your Brightwing will be living even a little longer thanks to the buff this week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, awesome. So, highly recommend these articles, right? Like, there's some good stuff in here.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot you can apply to your play. And even if the exact lesson of the article doesn't apply to the play, reading insight into how competitive works and why it works that way can help you understand more about how to play at your level, even if the exact same advice doesn't work. Better understanding of the game overall is going to help you improve.
Yeah, all good points. And again, we have links in the show notes. If you've never checked out the show notes before, once the podcast is up, you can find it at amove.tv/ITN. Just look for the episode number with the corresponding show notes you want to find. It's a link at the very bottom of the post. Or for these articles, just go to esports.heroesofthestorm com and check them out. But that's a show, basically. This went, I knew this was going to go long. Went a little longer than I expected. But so I think we'll wrap it up here. But great show. Dunk, thanks again for coming by, as always.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
Yeah. So thank you again to our patrons for supporting us over at patreon.com/ITN. Huge thanks to our producers, Declan H., Cheesy Bob, and Dirk. You can get Into the Nexus t-shirts at shirts.amove.tv and custom etched glassware, stuff like pint glasses and coffee mugs over at etched.amove.tv. Follow the show on Twitter at ITNcast. And around the table before we go, Dunk Train, as our returning guest for this episode, where can everybody find you?
Everybody can find me at Dunk Train on Twitter or twitch.tv/DunkTrain. Same place, same time.
Awesome. Kyle, yourself?
You can find me on Twitch as well under Kyle Ferguson. But this week, I want to promote a brand new show. I'm super excited about this. It has been near impossible to stay quiet about it. There is a new Frog Pants show called There Will Be Dungeons. And it is a Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition podcast as well as stream that is happening Saturday at 2 p.m. Pacific. I am a player. Bo Schwartz is our DM. And I get to be my first non-caster player ever. In fact, I normally DM in the first place. So I am so excited to play my lizard folk barbarian and bite some faces and roll some dice with the fine guys that I've been playing Team League with for a long time now.
Listen, I've spent most of my life, at least my life, knowing what a podcast even is, jealous that I'm not on Scott Johnson shows. I have never been more jealous in my entire life. This show sounds like the most fun thing in the world. I cannot wait to watch it, dude.
Then you understand my difficulty over the past several weeks as this has been building in the background.
Oh, yes. How you didn't just blurt it out the second you knew it was happening is beyond me. Well done, sir. Folks, you can find me staring longingly onto Twitter as I watch this D&D show at Garrett Art. 2 R's and 2 T's in Garrett. Every podcast I do, including this one, is over at amove.tv. Embrace the Spoilers is back this week. We spoiled the new Jumanji sequel that somehow is a direct sequel to a movie that came out 23 years ago. I didn't expect it to tie in that nice and neatly. Also, it's kind of a really good movie. Guys, by the way, spoiler alert, I enjoyed it. So go check out Embrace the Spoilers, all of the other shows at amove.tv. Check out my graphic design portfolio. I've been lackadaisical on promoting it lately. nomoonart.com. If you need a graphic designer, go and check it out. And if you check my Twitter, you can see a Frostborn tattoo that I recently designed for a buddy, and I cannot believe somebody asked me to draw something up so that they could put it on their body forever. So,
dude, that was good. That was real good.
Oh, that was terrifying. I was like measuring it, man. I had like the ruler out, making sure everything was right.
I don't know. People are putting detergent packets on their arms too. So, you know, I wouldn't worry about it.
I was hoping I'd make it out of this entire Tide Pod thing without it ever being brought up on a show I do. So thank you, Kyle. Thank you.
It was like almost Labo confusion levels for a good week.
Well, so much hope for the human race, right?
Right. Between EuroLeague and Tide Pod, I don't even know what we're doing, man.
Sometimes you have to herd cats in EuroLeague, and sometimes you have to embrace Darwinism in regular day-to-day life. So, whatever the case is, thank you all for enjoying this episode of Into the Nexus. I hope you did indeed enjoy it. Thank you. Thanks again to Dunk Train for joining us. And until next time, good luck and have fun.
Take care.
Rolling out.